colloidal silver right here on my desk. Stop by and make it yours. Coming up next, it's hour number one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Colloidal silver. I've heard about that. Yeah, welcome, folks, to the Dr. Future Show. Yeah, colloidal silver, that has deep history, Dave. I don't know if you know that, but it goes way back.
Oh, do tell. What do you know about colloidal silver?
There have been also concoctions of that throughout time. Silver was always considered to be a mercurial, magical substance, and people have done strange things with it since time immemorial. I could go into more detail, but we'll leave it at that.
Well, okay. There you go. There's some time immemorial colloidal silver.
Yeah, I'll talk
right
to Dave about its latest.
Dave's desk with all its mercurial magical properties.
This latest upgrade on Dave's desk here.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And that's not the only good stuff that he has waiting for you. As you know, this is the place to get stocked up.
It's a healthy party with Dave.
Healthy party stuff. Yeah. Supplies. But today, on the Dr. Future Show.
First of all, I wanted to say how much fun we had at the Santa Cruz Film Festival this weekend. That was just fantastic.
Yes.
And I want to thank the crew there.
By Jove, Santa Cruz crew. You
Elizabeth
have done it again. Yes, with Elizabeth Gumier holding it together all these years with a brand new crew to put the current film festival on. It was really fun.
Didn't you think? Yeah, I thought it was really cool to do unusual venues for watching the movies in. Like we saw a classic Kurt Russell film, Big Trouble in Little China, over at the Verve coffee roasting facility on Branson.
Yes, right, right. As long as you bring your own pillow, the seating was a little, it's a little temporary.
Little metal chairs.
Folding metal chairs. But the movie was hilarious and
the
it smelled
was,
great.
Yeah.
They had really nice hot cider.
Yes, yes.
And the movie was, that was definitely a crowd pleaser.
It was
so silly.
Yeah, and the only thing I can think of is that we need some better portable chairs on the planet than, folding chairs. Most of them are not really up to movie snuff standards.
Yes, well, if we're going to be turning coffee warehouses into theaters for the evening, what are you going to do?
I don't know, inflatable bean bags, something.
Right. I say bring your own blanket, then you have a soft place to put your bottom.
True enough. Or maybe something where you can have picnics and the screens are in a location it's easy to see when you're sitting or lying around.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to sitting in a chair.
Right, right. But really, the idea this year of the film festival, Santa Cruz Film Festival has always been known as a great festival for filmmakers because it's such a party every time. And it's usually a pretty small audience. I mean, there's not a lot of people who make the trek out for all the films in these like indie festivals. There's usually probably a dozen or more of really dedicated film fans who make it all worthwhile.
Definitely. And it was also really great that they brought a portable venue to the party.
The opening night.
The RVIP.
Yeah, great. Yeah, this Texas couple had decided to start their film career at the Austin Festival called South by Southwest. And their criteria for attending the festival as wannabe filmmakers was that they would bring their RV. They wanted to throw the best party at the festival for less money than it would cost to have a hotel room. And so they brought their decked out RV.
They were serious party people. They created
set up for karaoke.
38 foot long. The front end was a great karaoke bar. And the rear end of the RV was this incredible schmooze zone. for dancing.
It was, and the filmmakers were just adorable.
They were.
I tell you, you really want to see a lot more movies.
What was the name of their film?
Called Let's Ruin It with Babies.
Right. It's about their having their first kid. They were serious party people, and they decided to have a kid. And
yeah, it's a very provocative
movie. How they adapted, and they're still movie, like parties.
Very appealing for modern couples.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's not as offensive as the title sounds. That's really just a teaser.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty adorable. So.
Yeah, so.
Good love story.
Great event this weekend.
And it's available on Amazon Prime, so.
Oh, that's right, for free.
Yeah.
Right, if you have Amazon Prime, you can
download that movie, meet the filmmakers.
Don't Ruin It with Babies.
Yeah, which gets a total thumbs up here from Mrs. Future. It's a love story in disguise, so.
What I saw was good, but I was so tired I fell asleep in the film, but don't
you
let that reflect.
Out,
I know, I have to watch it for
really
free
clever.
Now.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get on to some future news, shall we?
Please, jump in.
All right, in outer space, all the news this week has been the Philae lander.
Yeah, we're finally targeting asteroids with our space program. Billions and billions of dollars to get to asteroids.
Yes, and Rosetta's Philae lander.
Which is a British, that's an ESA ship, right?
European, yes.
European, mm-hmm.
As you all probably know, it bounced a couple of times before it landed, and it didn't land quite right, and it's not getting very good sun in its current location. But the interesting news is that some of the probes have been working, and we've got some data about the surface just a little bit before the system fritzed out for a while. It was minus 243 degrees Fahrenheit, and then they stuck a probe in the ground and went down to 261 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. 261, so another 20 degrees. They pushed the probe into a cold pile of dust, is from what they can figure.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's...
They could only break a few millimeters of the surface, but that's what they had. It was called the hammer, but it didn't have a lot of hammering. It only went a few inches, but that's something, right? Yeah. Now we know that the dust...
It's 20 degrees
affects
colder.
Affects 20 degrees, yeah.
Without the sunshine at the surface of the asteroid.
So what they figured is that the hammer hit some hard surface under the dust.
Hmm. And probably knocked the asteroid off course.
And they think it's solid ice right underneath the layer of dust. Hmm. There's about 10 to 20 centimeters of dust covering the ice, strong, thick ice.
Wow. So even though it's traveling at like some, I heard one report say 40,000 miles an hour. Another report said 80,000 miles an hour.
Fast.
So somewhere in there.
Hey, synchronized.
Somehow the dust is sticking to the ice.
Yeah. Well, it's got a small amount of gravity. Uh-huh. So you have some gravity, no matter how big you are, you have some gravity. Everything has gravitational measurements. It's like we're able to measure groundwater, like they showed on 60 Minutes this weekend with the satellites. Wow. Yeah, everything, by measuring gravity, we can tell a lot about stuff.
I'll tell you. Yeah. All right.
So ice, big, thick ice right underneath the 3 inches of dust.
Right. And now they were hoping to have daily reports, but they only get an hour of sunshine instead
of six.
We'll
see. We'll keep you posted.
All right, folks. We'll be back after a few words from the sponsors here on Dr. Future Show, KSCO. And stay tuned and call in 479-1080.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Welcome, John Monahan, into the studio. And I wanted to talk to you about a little future space news before we move on to other realms.
Yeah, I hear you're talking about the news last week, Dr. Future.
Yeah,
we got
that's true.
Next
that's true.
Week.
Okay, well, NASA Pluto probe is about to wake from hibernation. So we have a probe called New Horizons. It's about to wake up from a long slumber and fly by Pluto.
Wow.
Yeah, it's called New Horizons. And it's emerging from its 99-day hibernation mode on December 6th. It'll be gearing up for 6 months of fun, you know, as it probes that deep part of space near Pluto.
I love it when space probes get into parts of the solar system that we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been kind of amazing. It's been taken in and out of hibernation at various points on its long journey there. It was launched in 2006, but it's mostly been sleeping. Mm-hmm. Saving up its juice for the final flyby.
Right. You know, when this probe left the planet, Pluto was still an official planet.
Got degraded since then.
And
then
yeah.
We'd never get the budget for this today.
Well, I understand that they're considering replanifying Pluto. So, you know.
Pluto's in Capricorn.
Pluto's in Capricorn, yeah.
Whatever that.
Well, listen, it begins technically on January 15th. And over the 6 months, the spacecraft will use 7 different science instruments to study the geography and the topology of Pluto. Mm-hmm. And it has its largest moon, Charon. Not Chiron, Charon. C-H-A-R-O-N.
Charon.
I guess you could say that.
Or Charon.
And it's going to look at Pluto's atmosphere, if there is one. Mm-hmm. You know, is it breathable? No, it's not going to be breathable. You can count on that, mm-hmm. at least for humans. And it'll search for undiscovered moons.
Oh.
There'll probably be rings and moons and stuff we don't even know about there.
It's amazing that Pluto actually has 5 moons. Is that what it said? Or 4? How many moons?
They've discovered 5 of them so far.
5
yeah,
moons.
Yeah, they think there might
and
be more.
I think Pluto itself is smaller mm-hmm. than most of the other planets.
Oh, it
I'm
is.
Sure
it's
smaller than
Mars.
Saturn
is like maybe twice the size of the moon, something like that.
Right.
So yeah. It's very, very tiny.
And yet it has 5 satellites.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty interesting. It's like a little tiny mini solar system itself, a little planet system.
Yeah. Right on the edge. That's
hey, we have a call. You want to say hi to Joe from Felton?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Hello, Joe. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show.
Hey, Joe.
How you doing?
Great.
Pretty good. How are you?
Here's a good question for you and everybody out there.
Sure.
You know, why are we so interested in going to space when we should be more interested in, like, what our planet is doing and, like, why we aren't building cities under the ocean and stuff like that? Really
well,
good
they're
thing.
Intimately related, don't you think, Joe? I mean, how are we going to get to space without getting into the ocean and... You know, it's really part of our human nature to become intelligent and want to explore,
Looking out, looking in.
Here's the thing. The more we know about the ocean and the planet, the more we know about ourselves. Space doesn't explain us, ourselves. But the ocean and the planets, our planet explains everything about us. We just need to learn more about it.
Well, I just put it on the same page. Like, that's maybe the difference is that I see that... Our desire to use our intelligence to make tools is the thing that lets us explore the ocean, because otherwise it would be out of bounds unless we took the evolutionary path like the dolphins and went back into the sea. If we want to speed up that process, we use our technology. It's our nature to use our technology to extend our range and get off the planet as well as explore the planet.
We could use the technology of spacecraft to make better underwater systems for us. You know, if we can go live on another planet, why can't we build something to live under the water with?
Oh, you're so preaching to the choir, man. I've often imagined that the best real estate for humans would be if we could, like, swim out in the ocean and have, like, little bubble homes just under the surface of the water.
That would work. You know, I was thinking more like large metropolises that are under the water, like Flash Gordon and all the old movies used to have.
Sure.
Yeah, jellyfish colonies of humans.
Yeah, well, if enough of us get together, you know, really, to do a space colony on Mars, we're going to have to master living in space colonies on the ocean.
I tell you, it'll be way more fun to be in the ocean. I'll give you that.
I think
the outer space, though, reflects the inner space in many ways. And the outer space is really being explored by robots. It's not really suitable for human beings at this point. So the robots are sending a lot of information about the universe that are universal principles that apply to the micro worlds as well as the large outer space worlds. You know, they're all connected.
With the robots and stuff, we could use those for space and just send them out there until we know it now.
That's what they're doing now, for sure.
It's a lot safer for people.
Yeah.
We can learn more about the water while those things are doing that.
Well, here's the thing is that there is water in outer space, and there's huge amounts. Like, there's one asteroid in the asteroid belt that has more water on it than the Earth has.
Imagine that slamming into Earth and flooding Earth.
Well, it probably did at some point. That's probably why we have water.
Talk about humans evolving back into being sea creatures, right? Yeah. We'd have to learn to swim pretty fast if that happened.
It's all part of this thing. You know, you think of the ocean ecology, you think of the planetary economy. What's the planet part of? The solar system. The solar system, what is it? It's an ecosystem. It's a whole living thing itself that we're part of. It's just another layer out. You know, we're finally sophisticated enough to start to look at that.
imagine if the ancients, the story about how the ancients mined the earth for gold to build an atmosphere around their planet wasn't really their planet. It was our planet that we live on now, and we built it then to save ourselves and destroyed all technology to a point that you couldn't know about it except for
pictures. That's kind of like the Zechariah Sitchin 12th planet stories.
Yeah.
Well, you know, power can be dangerous, but if we could really master all of our humanity, we could be wise enough to use it well.
In the history of the Earth, the comets created the oceans, all the water in the comets.
Yeah, it's not
millions
separate.
Of comets.
It's
probably.
Not separate. Yeah, I mean, to see how it all interconnects, at least on the solar system level. Look, the galaxy itself has got an organizational structure to it that we're part of too. Right. I mean, I think that's and it probably reflects what's going on in terms of our understanding of the oceans and what's going on within our planet. You know, they're all universal principles that we're exploring. We're just starting to become aware of. It's an amazing time. You know, I think we really are poised on a true renaissance.
I'm definitely not a scientist, but I'll tell you what. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to learn more about what we're doing to our planet. Because, you know, when they pull out all the oil and fracking and they replace it with water. Well, see, oil doesn't know gravity. That I know. And it doesn't move with the moon and stuff. It stays still. But with the water, it moves with the gravity and causes sinkholes. This is where all these sinkholes are coming from. And we're taking the cushion barrier, the loving cushion barrier that the Earth has, to cushion the land, and using it for our vehicles. We really need to look at what we're doing to the planet more than anything else. And that's why I said we should look at more living in water and becoming more solar efficient.
Yeah.
Been talked about for years, but, you know, Tesla was probably the smartest man to figure out what the Egyptians and all the other people were using in ancient times for electricity that we are just now learning they were using.
Hey, Joe, I got to give you a 30-second warning. We're going to go to a break soon.
Yeah,
here.
But point I understand. I just don't see them as separate. You know, I mean, and you live in the perfect area for studying the ocean. Go over to the Monterey Bay Aquarium, and there's research there and all kinds of people doing stuff in the ocean that'll blow your mind.
And also, I do believe that we could get a little smarter, even if we've made some mistakes in the past. I don't think we're going to be stuck with them. So hopefully we'll be able to learn from our mistakes and then do things better.
Yeah. So thanks for calling, man.
Yeah, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Bye.
A couple other things. We've pushed the inkjet printing electronics to the next level. I'm really excited about this. It's a new type of inkjet printer that doesn't just print paper or even plastic like the 3D printers. It prints electronic circuits. Amazing.
Electronic circuits.
Yeah.
So would you do with some printed electronic circuits?
It'll make electronic circuits printable into everything. I mean, we have walls that are basically dumb. They don't have anything in them. They're just walls. And there'll be wallpaper with electronics in them. They'll be able to pay attention to details like your heart rate or your EEG. Things become more dynamic and interactive. Your entire environment becomes more alive. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yes, I was just mentioning this new electronic printer that prints not just paper or plastic, but prints electronic circuits. One of the first demos that it could do, they printed an X-ray imager, right? Something that you might see at the dentist office, but now can be printed on your printer. It's a demonstration of how far this technology can go. This was done at the Palo Alto Research Center. Nina Eng is one of the main spokespersons for it. Making electronics on conventional wafers of silicon can be very expensive and time-consuming, and traditional photolithography takes time as well. You got to put layers of stuff on plastic, and you got to put stencil-like masks on it, and you got to shine ultraviolet lights through it, and you got to repeat this process ad infinitum to create circuits. And people have developed ways of doing this faster and easier, obviously. All our electronics are pretty much today are done this way.
A digital X-ray sensor.
It's used by doctors in the field. It can be used as a security scanner or a biofeedback scanner. It can help soldiers identify bombs in a battlefield. They're looking at what kind of circuits can be built from this printer.
Yeah, it seems like people, you know how you used to have those little label guns that you would like type in a label and put it on something?
Yeah.
Like you're going to be able to type out a little sensor unit and stick it on something, and then that little thing will then have an ID and be able to talk to other devices on the internet.
Yeah, yeah, like that. I need a heart pacer or a heart sensor, or I need something to see infrared.
And there's 3D printers as well.
Well, that's right. They mostly do plastic and metal. Yeah. You know.
Listen, you want to say hi to Liberty from Santa Cruz?
Yeah, I know, Liberty. Hey, Liberty, how you doing?
Hi, Liberty.
Hey, good afternoon.
Yeah.
Oh,
good
boy, afternoon. You sound like you're in a very deep tunnel.
Where are you now? Where are you calling us from?
I'm in an empty house, and I'm moving outside so that I'll sound like I'm coming up out of the well.
Oh, good.
good. Empty house, huh? What happened?
Oh, it's a house that's turning over. You know, it's empty right now because they're trying to put it on the market, and I'm doing a little work in there.
Oh, okay.
So, but it's always nice to talk to the futures.
Yeah, thanks for
calling. Nice to talk to you too, man.
What's on your mind today?
Well, a previous caller rattled my brain about something. What do you think about the subject of abiotic oil? Do you think there's anything to it?
I think it's possible. Yeah, I think especially if you start to think of the planet as a living organism, then mm-hmm. it's going to be generating fluids of all kinds and disassembling them and assembling them, much like any living thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, I read an article a bunch of years ago that made a lot of sense to me, and it was written by a guy named Malov, I think, who famously was killed in his own home.
Malov, yeah, the free energy.
Bob Malov. He was publishing an energy magazine of something. Anyway, there was an article in there that was so smart that was talking about how, I think it was oil fields in Russia were being mined even after they dried up. And the theory was that because of the high pressure in the center of the earth, there's this kind of like constant release of hydrocarbons from the center of the earth that seeps out to the edge of the planet and becomes a renewable source of oil. So we're mining at the, you know, at the outer layer. We've recently developed technology to go down a few miles, but it's a few thousand miles to the other side of the planet. And in the middle there, we really don't know that much about what is going on. At least I don't. So it made sense to me that there are earth biological processes that are actually liberating hydrocarbons.
Do you believe it yourself? What do you think?
Well, there are several things that make me think there's something to it. For one, it amuses me that it's lumped into the category of fossil fuel, when actually coal is obviously a fossil fuel because they find fossils imprinted in coal all the time. Mm-hmm. But gas or oil is often found at depths that are way below any geologically any layers that animals would have lived on.
Yeah, so it'd be maybe a different process than biological life creating it. Some other.
Yeah, right. Right. Mm-hmm. Also, there are several gas wells that have been capped up that have been thought to be pumped out, and they go back and check on them later, and behold, there's more oil in there. Mm. So something, of course, you could say, well, it's just seeping back into those pockets from sort of like what do they call an underground water, an aquifer?
Aquifer, yeah.
Maybe there's a petrifer.
Yeah.
Well, it does bring up an interesting point. I mean, how much do we actually have very good images of how all this works? You know, you should have something like a circulatory system of the planet. We should be able to look at something like that and be able to tell what these things are. But the reality is still at this day is we're still in the dark ages. We barely can find water with well digging. We have to resort to fairly unsophisticated approaches.
Yeah, I have to think that there are plenty of people with masters in various kinds of science that know a whole lot more than we do about how the center of the earth is actually generating things on the surface all the time. I mean, the only thing that we really get any news about is maybe lava, but there's probably all kinds of things oozing and seeping from the center of the earth.
Yeah, I think an anatomy of the planet, an animated anatomy of the planet would be very interesting to have available.
Yeah.
Especially in real time, so we can take the weather, not just of the atmosphere, but of the planet itself.
Yeah. And really seeing the earth more as like a living organism rather than this gold mine where you go and dig until you run out of the things that used to be there.
Yeah, like we hear about these volcanoes going off. Do we get any reports on maps showing where other volcanoes are going off right now as well? Do we look at the flow overall? Do we have any way of referencing that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if we think of the map of lava on the planet like a circulatory system of the Earth, we would be talking about it in a very different way.
We'd at least have more of a comprehension of it.
Yeah, we wouldn't be just thinking of it as something that's intending to take out a few houses that were built in its path.
Yeah, well,
Earth-centric view.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious that the Earth is not static, that it's a process.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the big change here is to being able to think of it as a whole system, right? Mm-hmm. That it's alive. You know, I think that's probably the hardest part.
It's what created Hawaii and Iceland and quite a few other places.
Yeah.
Right. Hawaii, the only state in the nation that's growing.
Yeah. But to see it. Yeah, it is. It's just churning out land. We spend millions of dollars for that land. It is just churning it out like it was nothing.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for the call, Liberty.
I've got to get back to work. I just thought I'd get your take on it. Okay,
yeah.
Thanks. I'll be listening.
Bye-bye. Sure, no problem.
Great. Bye-bye.
Yeah, seeing the Earth is alive, I think, is the big shift. I think if you ask most scientists if the Earth is alive, they wouldn't know what to say initially. They said, well, there's a lot of living things on it, but itself is a living thing. Well, you know, questionable.
Yeah, well, you have to go back to their definition of life, right? I mean, scientists have a very narrow definition of life.
Well, we have a biological definition of life that's pretty reasonable.
Well, it involves reproduction.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't exactly see our planet reproducing itself.
And anti-entropic.
That we know of.
The sun is alive as well.
Well, that's the thing, is that once you bind to the idea that the planet is alive, then what does that make the solar system or the galaxy for that matter?
Gigantic.
Right? And if it's alive, WTF. I mean, it's not biological life. And so it means our definition of life has to be more expanded. And that's where science meets shamanism.
Some quantum physicists believe that all matter is conscious because of all the energy in the atom.
Yeah, that is a commonly held.
Well, I think the history of science, at least that we know, is a history of going from thinking that the world is tiny and that it's focused and centered on us and that it's fixed and controllable. We keep getting more reasons to believe that we are tiny, that it's not controllable, and that it's vaster than we can barely even imagine. And it's like you have to really set yourself free as a life form and say, okay, I'm going to float on this ocean. I'm not going to try and control it all.
Yeah, you're part of a much larger process that's unfolding.
Should make us all humble.
You would think.
Once you're humble, then...
Ego is an amazing process, I tell you.
After being humble, I think you can get kind.
We're just another speck in the sky.
Okay, hey, let's talk to Rick at Royal Oaks. And,
yes.
Hello, Rick. Welcome to Dr. Future Show.
Hey there.
Nick.
Nick.
Once upon a time, it was too fast for me to reach that we were going to land on the comet.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? 40,000 to 80,000 miles an hour. That's amazing.
Are we still calling it an ice ball?
Yeah, well, it looks like it is.
We found dust and something hard, so it could be iron, too.
Well, yeah, we know there's a layer of ice. We know that much, but we don't know much more than that. We don't know exactly how thick it is and whether or not there's anything below the ice. But we're trying, you know.
It's a really interesting shape because it's like two balls stuck together with a little neck in the middle, almost like a dumbbell or something, you know.
Or it's been eroding on the inside as it twirls.
Maybe
the dust kind of siphons into the center and it's just grinding it down.
Could be.
You mean like a circulatory system of some sort?
It's not tumbling.
Yeah.
It's staying stable. Is that true? It's not tumbling?
Yeah. It's pretty stable.
Okay. The temperature of the spacecraft, was there any readings on that?
Well, they say it was about 20 degrees warmer than the surface, you know, so it's very, very cold.
Well, the spacecraft in the probe outside, is it that cold? It's not a wind chill factor.
No, it's just deep space, you know?
Because what I'm going at is, you know, you see our water came from comets, and I say that's boo roar. It's only a perk. It's only the start of the thinking. And what I'm saying is the comet going through space, there is water in space, and that speed and velocity is condensing it, the water. And I would say that's our going through space is condensing and collecting at the same time, different rate.
Could be. The end is near. Listen, we're going to go to another break, and thanks for the call. We'll be right back. Okay, great. Bye-bye.
At Physicians Medical Group of Santa Cruz, we broke the mold. You want healthcare that meets your needs, not the needs of the average person. Just like you, the mold was broken when we were made. We're independent doctors for independent people. We're electronically connected with other physicians, labs, hospitals, and pharmacies, looking at real-time data about your real-time care needs. Visit PMGSCC.com.
Food with its farmer's face on it. One of the best things you can do for yourself, your family, and your community is to eat locally grown food. And one of the best places to find that food is at a Monterey-based certified farmer's market. Certified means the farmer who sells the food is the farmer who grew the food.
Fresh for you in November at the Monterey Bay certified farmer's markets. Almonds, bacon, beets, bread, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, coffee, dates, eggplants, flowers, free-range chickens, fresh seafood, honey, kale, kiwi, mushrooms, olives, olive oil, oysters, pasture-raised beef, peppers, pumpkins, sausages, sweet corn, Swiss chard, strawberries, and much, much more. In November at the Monterey Bay Certified Farmers Markets.
For food with its farmer's face on it. Tuesday 9 to 1 at the Barnyard Center in Carmel. Friday 10 to 2 at Monterey Peninsula College. Saturday 8 to noon at Cabrillo College in Aptos. And Sunday 8 to noon at the Del Monte Center in Monterey. See you at the market.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yes, indeed. We have some evidence to show that bandwidth is definitely going to be increasing on a large scale in the near future. There's several stories on this topic of increasing bandwidth. But let me look at a segue from the comet. Okay, one of the things that we're also, NASA's also been doing is designing a internet for the solar system.
Mm-hmm. Really? Yeah. An internet for the solar, now that is getting ready for the
future. I'll tell you more. I'm not going to report
emails
on it this
from
week,
Mars.
But there's research going on in that because the spaceships need to navigate, and we all know how great GPS is for us just getting from A to B here on planet Earth. Makes it even easier for us to coordinate the very complex motions that need to be done in space, you know, for synchronizing with asteroids and stuff like that.
And there's life on Europa, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Inside that water.
Yeah, and when they need bandwidth, too. Mm. So closer to home, there's been some progress on Project Loom. Okay, Project Loom. You heard of that one, son?
No, I've never heard of Project Loom.
No? No? It's a Google project. Mm-hmm. Loon, L-O-O-N.
Uh-huh. Like, and what is their goal? What is Project Loon intending to do?
Well, the project here involves balloons around the planet. We put balloons up into the jet stream and into the currents of the upper atmosphere. And they just float around on the different currents. There's like a highway system of the sky. We don't have to make it. It's already there. And what we do is we put these balloons in and we put internet connectivity devices on them so that people can have bandwidth wherever the balloons are. And the balloons connect with each other to form a network, right? So that they have a constant bandwidth capability through the whole thing. So even though the balloons are moving around, they all connect. And so it's not like you go in and out of bandwidth. You're always staying in bandwidth.
Yeah. It makes me think there's this Osho card in the Zen Tarot deck, right? Uh-huh. The card has a monk who is like crossing a river. Mm-hmm. And in order to cross the river, he has to hop to a stone. And then from that stone, he can hop to another stone. And then from that stone, he gets hop to another stone. And that's how he gets across the river. And that's kind of how this balloon bandwidth is going to work.
That's the little network of stones, or in this case, the jet stream and the flows in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
They'll be testing about 20 balloons in West Queensland. Mm-hmm. They're working with a company there called Telstra to provide base stations for the radio spectrum. And the idea is that this project will provide connectivity to parts of the planet that are hard to reach otherwise. Hmm. Pretty neat, huh?
Yeah, it's very cool. I'm all in favor of solar system bandwidth.
Yeah.
Seems more organic than satellites. They could also do some organic of the things that satellites do.
It is organic in the sense it's moving around and not being, you know.
Well, I mean, the thing about sending stuff up into the atmosphere is that eventually it has to come down. So as long as it's happening safely. Balloons sound pretty harmless, but then when you start putting like computers on the end of them, then you got to wonder if they're going to, you know, hit somebody in the head sometime. Let's hope not.
Yeah, you know, so they will come down. You can count on that. They're not going to permanently be up there all the time. However, I think it's a valid exploration of providing bandwidth to the planet. And
sure. Hey, balloons are great. I love the satellite approach. Fact that balloons are being used in South Korea to send chocolate pies across the border. You know?
Yeah, the balloons are very cool. I wouldn't mind having a hotel, staying in a hotel in a balloon.
Everybody wants bandwidth, right?
That's a Zeppelin, right? Remember?
Yeah, I would have loved to travel in the Zeppelin days. That was so cool.
Yeah, really.
And great view, slow, not hearing a lot of airplane noise, having spaciousness and view. I mean, that would be awesome.
All right, well, let's give a moment to our caller, Robert from Aptos. You want to say?
Sure. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Robert. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show. What's that?
Is this okay?
Yeah,
better. Sound good.
That's better. You're over-modulating there a moment.
Okay. So is this some kind of a crazy green initiative thing with the balloons?
Is it because what? A crazy history?
Let me take you off.
Speakerphone.
There we go.
Yeah, let's get to the source here. Direct. Okay.
Fiber glass. I mean, do you know the bandwidth of fiber?
I know the latest breakthrough on that has been an unbelievable 255 terabits per second on a single fiber. Unbelievable.
Yeah, the white paper's been written for 400 gig.
Yeah, right now that's the current capability, but the potential is even far greater.
There is no defined bandwidth.
I know, right? It's unbelievable. It really is.
The idea of sticking balloons in the air, when we've got glass, when we can do 186,000 miles per second.
Yeah.
To put balloons in the air seems a little far-fetched.
Oh, are you saying that it's kind of like going backwards? It's kind of slow?
Yes.
Well, okay. Well, here's the thing is that fiber is great, but it costs a fair amount of, like in New York City, to put fiber, a single kilometer of new fiber costs about $800,000.
Yeah, if you're going to cover the planet, you might have less resistance
The planet is already covered in fiber. There's more dark fiber in the world than there's
It's hardly been used. And you've got a point there. We're not really utilizing our resources.
Oh, so maybe Google should just buy all the dark fiber.
They have.
Skip the balloon thing.
Well.
It just seems to make more sense to me. I mean, it's unlimited bandwidth. We don't know. Hell, did anyone see 10 years ago smartphones? The way they operate now?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, well, it's an evolving process, right? Emergent qualities of new technologies. We figure it out as we go along.
Uh-huh.
I have to be a trainer in this field. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what's coming down the pipe. I mean, I work for the biggest corporations and stuff, and they don't even know what's coming down the pike.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
It's magic.
No, I think that that's true. The real mystery is actually what is going to happen. You know, and no one really knows. And, you know, that's
so as somebody who trains in it, Robert, what do you project? Where do you think it's going to? Is it just, are we feeding
it? I think we're going to repurpose the copper to utilize it in bath systems and building automation systems. And we'll use it for air conditioner, lighting, and we'll use them for LEDs. And we'll reuse the copper. There's just too much of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Mm-hmm. So things keep on upgrading to new uses as we evolve.
Yeah, that's my take on it. And, you know, hey, I could be as long as the next guy.
No, okay, good. I'd say we're going through massive change really quickly. What about the singularity? Do you believe in that?
Yeah, I was thinking less of an engineering perspective and more of a what is our planetary consciousness doing with all of these toys?
I think superorganism theory is worth looking at. Yeah, that's a possibility.
I think it's all worth looking at.
Yeah.
And I can't close my mind as much as I'd like to say, oh yeah, fiber's the end all be all. I can't say that.
Yeah.
I used to say that copper was going away.
Yeah. Yeah, at least in its current context. Maybe you can say for sure it's going away in its current context. But yes, it is a very valuable material and it undoubtedly will find better use. I would agree with you on that. Exactly what? Well, who really knows at this point? Yeah.
At this point, we're not really quite sure where it's going to go yet.
That's true. Yeah.
True.
But it doesn't stop us from guessing. I wonder about this new laser radio links that are being devised. This was an MIT technology review this week. They're wireless links that bypass fiber as well. They're using a laser combined with a microwave dish.
But it's so slow.
It is, but
so
it's
vulnerable.
2 gigabits per second. I mean, it's slow, but it's... It's faster than what we've got.
And it's terribly vulnerable.
More so than fiber, but it's cheaper. You can just deploy a couple of them, and you suddenly have bandwidth.
Think of it as point to point, right? We're not talking about universal solutions as much as maybe last mile solutions.
There are ones that you could carry in the trunk of your car and set up and have a network that spans 20 miles in less than a day. So it has this.
I'm seeing it even shorter than that. I think that data centers are packed with fiber.
Yeah.
You don't need to be, use the Ethernet. For all of that switching.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take on it.
Okay. Well, good. Appreciate that.
Anyway.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks
for the call, Robert. Good to keep a perspective. Bye bye.
Yeah, and keep in mind, we are mobile beings. We don't have wires attached to us, so the more we can get bandwidth without having to be connected to anything is better, too.
Absolutely. You know, we want to return to our pure telepathic powers, but have it amplified by the whole planet.
I consider it tele-empathic.
Tele-empathic. Yeah. There you go. Yes. Tune in and transmit. All right, so we're at the end of the first hour here. What's coming up in the next hour?
Yes, we're interviewing Dr. Meg Blackburn, who's going to be talking about the next generation, which he calls the children of now. And we're going to find out what she means by that.
All right. Okay, folks. Well, fun talking to you here today on the Dr. Future Show. And we're going to take a little break for news and traffic and weather. And Dave Michaels is here with your tangy tangerine and all that good stuff. If you want to come down and get some, stay tuned for more of the Dr. Future Show in the second hour. KSEO Santa Cruz, Salinas, San Jose, Monterey. Thanks for listening.